All right. So, yes, I'm exhausted. It's 8:36 here in Chicago. And my exhaustion comes from I just got off the phone with a new executive virtual assistant. This guy has got he's got an engineering degree. He's got an MBA. He's got a great pedigree, worked for some really big companies. He set up his own coaching company, but kind of struggling with that, kind of as a franchise of another company. He's a Christian, franchise of another company, but struggling with that and turning it into money. And he doesn't even recognize that it's a struggle. He thinks it's just totally normal that it's gone, I guess, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, 7 months. And I don't know that he's made any money on it at all. And he's not, doesn't seem like he's upset about that, or it's like, yeah, I'd like to make money. He's missing, I think, the fire in the belly. His wife is, you know, really struggling a lot. You know, she's in education, been in education her whole life, so she doesn't understand the entrepreneur and what goes on. But I don't think he understands the entrepreneur and what goes on either. And so it's like we have a training program that's designed, you know, for I think a 9-year-old could do it. It's you do this, you do this, you do this. And he failed epically on that. I mean, just epically. And so I'm curious, I'm like, how does somebody work for a big company? How does somebody get an MBA? How does somebody have, you know, an engineering degree? And how can somebody epically fail on something that I think a 9-year-old could do?
Well, questions. What's his age?
He's 49.
Okay. And
or 48 maybe.
Yeah. What's his is he a high C?
He is a let me do a translation here. Let me get his information up. He's a very unusual personality. I mean, in one test he tests out as one personality, but then in another test he tests out as another.
Yeah.
Let me get it up. Okay, so in one test let's see. I need to do a translation.
Yeah, in terms of DISC, sounds like a high C or an S.
He's an S in one. He's an S and a C, so he's S primarily in one,
yeah.
And then a C secondary. In the other test, though, he's a DI.
Okay. Well, here's what. When I ran those tests on a lot of people, the test I use, the DISC test, gives you your most and your least. And one is your basic, and the other is your kind of, it's a kind of a wannabe. It's how you're trying to adapt to your present circumstances. So my guess is this person is an S or a C, trying in a situation where he's trying to be a D and an I, but that's not his natural, so it puts a lot of stress in his life. And it's just not an entrepreneur. In years of teaching entrepreneurship in the MBA program, you know, after just a few classes, I would take certain students' records and put NEM at the top, not entrepreneurial material. And it's not that they couldn't learn to be it, but it's not their natural, and they would not thrive in it. Because, as you say, no fire in the belly, they tend to be more reactive than proactive, and they're not rainmakers, which is not atypical of an engineer. And the question that I would ask is, okay, you trained as an engineer, you worked for some big companies. What did you like most about that? What did you like least about that? Why did you bail out of that and get into something that is typically you're your own boss and you're responsible for making your own rain? And the answers to that would probably reveal what he's up against.
Well, this is what he said, because I ask him those questions.
Yeah.
You know, this is what he said. He said that he loves structure, but he hates it.
Yeah.
He loves structure and like the engineering or big companies, you go in. He loves fitting in, but he hates it. And then he loves the controlled environment, but he hates it.
Yeah.
And then he said that he wasn't able to go ahead and I don't know how many years he's been married, but he has a 7-year-old son.
Yeah.
And so he felt that his other jobs were not giving him the time that he wanted to with his wife and his son.
Okay. The other place that I would go, he used to go fairly regularly, you kind of dance around it with some peripheral questions, but really what you're interested in is the relationship with his father. And then since he has a son, the relationship with his son. To me, it's amazing how many times that came out. You wind up with people who could not abide the authority of their father. And it makes them uncomfortable with authority. They don't know how to relate to authority. So even though they're fitted into a structured environment, that's where they would normally thrive, they can't really abide it for long. And that creates a difficulty because an awful lot of entrepreneurs are in that category.
What's the category?
Well, people who have a problem with authority, because the only way any of us can naturally relate to authority and be comfortable with it is if we got comfortable with it at a very early age. But if it made us uncomfortable at a very early age, it persists. And so if you struggle with your father's authority or had no father, then you go into the workforce and all of a sudden there's got to be some discipline, organization, and authority, and you don't know how to handle that. And so you struggle against that. And typically you go through 2 or 3 or 4 jobs. And when I ask them to fill out a questionnaire, I get them to list all the jobs they've had and just say, okay, what did you like most about this? What did you like least about this? And why did you leave? And it's amazing how many times you get a pattern that, oh, they were unfair, or they didn't do it, or this, that. And you can see the pattern. They've never seen it before themselves, but you see the pattern. They left because they couldn't deal with an authority structure. And so very often they wind up in a job where there is no authority structure. And then if they're not a certain type of individual that is self-disciplined, because you're either going to have to accept discipline or self-discipline.
See, now that's just huge.
Entrepreneur is very self-disciplined.
Oh,
that is
just, oh my gracious. I got to get that down. I got to write that one down.
So I don't know this person, but these are some of the questions, and I've been through, you know, I've done this with at least, and have files on at least 100 students. It's amazing how revealing it is, and a lot of them just told me, said, oh my God, I never thought about this in that particular way, and I see it myself now. And, you know, to be self-aware and know who you are and where you are is very helpful. And we have an awful lot of people, more and more in our society, that are the children of single homes and this and that and the other. And through no fault of their own, they're very mixed up about discipline and authority and so on. And you see that in general in the culture of the society, which is changing exactly in that direction. And it becomes more and more dysfunctional. And so the answer here, of course, is that in his job, as you very well know, as an entrepreneur, he has to have a lot of self-discipline, which is difficult because he's got to learn the discipline of selling. He's got to know his numbers, how many calls he has to make, how to do the work without anybody telling him. And that's hard. And that may be the problem with his lack of success. Now, it doesn't mean he can't learn that, but he has to come to a realization that he must do that or pop himself back into a position where there is structure where he can be more comfortable. But he's obviously operating in an area that is not his natural personality. And so if you've got an SC trying to be a DI, you're going to struggle that way. You can do it, but you're going to have a much more difficult time and probably less success. And the bottom line is he's doing it for a reason that is almost a will-o'-the-wisp. Because he wants more time with his family, and he's not going to get it because in the situation he's in, his job is really going to require more time than if he had a structured 9-to-5 job. He just doesn't realize that yet, or didn't realize it when he got into it.
And well, so, he's also does teaching. So he does teaching, and he brings in some money that way. And then his, you know, wife brings in money, so she's stressed, you know, and he plans on just working pretty much kind of, you know, forever.
Well, see, he's also struggling with the dichotomy that hits men today because they don't know who they are. In my generation, we knew that our primary function was to be a provider. and we at least got some fulfillment about from being a good provider. Nowadays, men don't even know what they are or what role or function they have in the family, if any.
Because
if he's in a family where his wife has a vocation, a calling to teach, and it's in a relatively low pay profession, and she's looking for a man provider, then he may be getting more time with her, but it's sure going to be less quality because she's her disappointment level is only going to increase. And his fulfillment and satisfaction level is going to decrease. So there's a mismatch in there somewhere. And I fully sympathize with him because I'm not good at the discipline of selling either. It's a weakness. So, and it's hard work, at least for some of us that have a C or an S personality.
Because the C and the S?
He's all of it. You know, when you go into business for yourself, you got to be two all things to all people. It's a mess because you've got to be able to sell, and then you got to be able to fulfill what you've sold. Well, a lot of people go into a job like that because they're very good at fulfilling whatever they sold, but they're not good at selling it. So they're constantly frustrated because if you've got nothing to fulfill, you're not doing what you really like to do and are gifted to do. You got to be going and out doing what you hate doing and are not gifted to do.
Hmm.
Those people are better off with in a structured company where the labor is divided and there are those people going out and selling and bringing them in the carcass that they killed, and all he has to do is butcher it and cook it and serve it. And that's what where he's gifted.
So franchises are a franchise is not a franchise owner is not an entrepreneur.
Well, yes, he is the and there are different kinds of franchises, but most of them it's all in your lap. All they do is tell you how to do it. Now, there are some franchises that are put you into a more of a fulfillment job than a selling job if you get but they are more capital intensive. Typically, if you buy yourself a McDonald's franchise, they've already figured out the selling. You don't have to go out and do a whole lot of selling. Some, but not a whole lot. You follow the system, and you're just 90% of your job is fulfilling. Whereas you get into a C-12 franchise, and by golly, you got to be out there selling as well as fulfilling.
Right.
In some franchises, I had a C-12 member once that was in a franchise on fitness. And some of those are pretty good, and some of them are a real ripoff. And he was in a real ripoff thing. They provided little or no help for him, but charged him an arm and a leg and charged him a lot to get in, and then he couldn't get out. It was a bad deal. So some of them give you good value for the money they charge by relieving you of some duties or skills that you might not have. But some of them, a real con job, they just charge you and give you very little of value.
Right.
So, see, we have that trouble in C-12 because a good C-12 facilitator needs the two different skills, and people who are really good at recruiting, they're the high eyes who, that's all they want to do. And when it comes to fulfilling, they struggle there. And then you have the other types that man, they can fulfill like man, but they have a real struggle to recruit their members.
Right.
It sounds to me that he's in a situation that doesn't suit him, and it doesn't mean that he can't do it. It just means that there's going to be a whole lot more stress in his life doing this than possibly doing something else. There's a price to pay for everything. He wanted more time with his family, and he doesn't seem to be to understand the price that he's got to pay for that.
Well, the thing that's interesting is I think, and I could be wrong, I'm going to have him listen to this recording because this will help him, I think. But I think that he's willing to pay the price, but I think his wife is really struggling under the weight of that. And
well, then there's a typical lack of communication between them. And we all have varying degrees of miscommunication with our wives. She was not given clarity on the trade-off. Because he didn't really understand the trade-off, maybe, when he got into it.
Right. Right, and he doesn't truly understand the pain that he will be in, with his wife when she struggles to show him honor, which men want. And so...
Well, you know, if he's not successful in his job, and I don't know what the measures of success in his job is, but and he may feel like he is successful in his job, and if he's making all the money he needs to in the job and has all the work he needs and he's comfortable, that's fine. That's a measure of success in itself. But if his wife's not content with the success he's having in his job, then I question whether he will continue to feel successful with a wife that feels ambivalent about his success.
See, and I think based on the tests we use, we've discovered what's called the GEO test and then the pain quadrant test, and so which of the four shapes do you tend to like the most? And that's the one he tested out is the SI or SC.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is the pain quadrant test. And so what causes somebody to be, which of these four things would cause you, so the first test is which of these four shapes would you tend to like the most, a cube, a pyramid, wavy line, or ball?
Yeah.
So he chose the ball and the cube, which is going to be the SC. Then we ask him which of these four things would cause you the most frustration in any area of your life. Not being done properly, in order, out of control, boring or not fun, or conflict.
Yeah.
And he chose, in that test, he chose the not boring or not fun, boring or not fun, and then out of control. Well, that's a totally, or no, out of control and then boring or not fun. That's a totally different, I mean, so what he's got is he's got like a split personality. I mean, there's a part of him that desires, you know, people getting along.
Yeah.
And, you know, structure and everything being done. But as soon as he gets into that for a little while, then he gets bored. And he wants to control things. Well, if you're working for another company, you're not going to control it. And he wants it to be fun, which, you know, a lot of times that's not going to be the first thing on somebody else's list if you're employed by him.
Yeah.
And so he's got this dichotomy inside of him. And my experience with those type of people, it's a really unusual personality, but those type of people, when they're hot, they're really hot, and when they're not, they're really not. There's my experience, there's only about 3% of the professional coaches, people who do it for a living, that know how to coach these people, because they're so unusual. When they're hot because they're analyzing when they should analyze, executing when they should execute, focused on the task when they should the task, and people when they should the people. And so it's like a symphony. People look back and they can be everything to everybody all the time. It's like, whoa, that person's amazing. But when they're cold, they're analyzing when they should execute. They're executing when they should analyze. They're focused on the task when they should the people, and people when they should the task. I mean, it is their life. Their business is a mess.
Yeah.
And so it's like he's lost. It's like I can see his potential. It's right there. But then some really basic, simple things, I'm scratching my head, and I'm like, wow, okay, how do you not have some of those, you know, simple things? And I can see it. Like, there's an entire training, online training program for the executive virtual assistants.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen anybody that takes such spectacular notes.
Yeah.
But he missed the most important part, the big picture. And I'm like, and that often happens with the ISSC, the C.
Oh, the engineers.
Yeah, the engineers. So he tests out SC in the one, and so the C, I can see how it's like they're really good at notes, they're good in formal education, but when they get thrown into real life, maybe not so much.
Yeah. Well, very often when we structure or restructure our career path, we have a hard time taking into consideration our personal strengths and weaknesses. It's something that we all need help with from the outside, because it's very hard to, and all of us to one extent or another have blind spots where we're shooting ourselves in the foot and don't know it. And others can see it pretty much right away, but you can't see it yourself.
Do you have any insights on how I might be shooting myself in the foot?
Well, yeah. You know, we all do it. We all have our blind spots, and it doesn't do you any good for somebody to point it out to you, because if they do, you still can't see it. You have to come to realize it yourself. Now, people can help you come to that realization, but it takes questions, not statements. Eventually, you do come to it. And that's when you get the aha moment. But rarely when somebody tells you, can't you see what you're doing to yourself? No, not so much. He's got he's now sort of in midlife, and he's got a family and a wife, and he's got to analyze himself and his situation from their perspective as well as his. But the primary thing that we all have to do is analyze our life and our calling from our Lord's perspective, because he made each one of us perfect for something. And if you've got a very unique personality, then all the more are you perfect for one thing, and that one thing may be harder to find. It's kind of like having a very odd blood type. If you got just the standard O type blood type, well, your blood's good for almost anybody. But if you got an AB positive like I do, you ain't no good for most people, but you're very necessary for a few who are like you. So, and it means that if you're a little different, you march to a different drum beat, then perhaps you have to be a little bit more introspective and a little bit more discerning in trying to find the right niche for you.
So, in theory, there might be a few people on the planet that you might be able to say, hey, this is a blind spot, and they might be able to actually go ahead and recognize it once it's pointed out to them.
Yeah, but it's more likely that they'll understand it if they come to see it themselves.
Right, agreed. Like an O blood type.
Yeah.
But there might be some individuals out there that could go ahead and, if it's pointed out, could go ahead and like Nicodemus, he would be, right?
Well, he had a hard time understanding it, and he didn't do an aha and immediately recite the sinner's prayer.
Right. What about the guy that was the, Ethiopian eunuch?
Yeah. Now, he did.
And so, like, I think I could be...
But the Ethiopian eunuch, you see, he was asking the right question.
So what question could I ask you that would open you up to where you would share with me what you think maybe my blind spot is?
Well, see, that the question I would ask questions that I would ask would hopefully lead you to an acknowledgement that, like everybody, you also have blind spots. And your blind spots to areas where you're really shooting yourself in the foot. It's the only place where you can hinder yourself in your life. And eventually you come to a realization that, yes, that is true of everybody. But most of us think it's true of everybody, but not me.
Well, I don't know if I've ever met anybody that would say they don't have any blind spots. I mean, I know I've got blind spots. I mean, if I didn't know I had blind spots, I wouldn't be asking trim put on them.
Well, true, but most people, if you put it that way, they'll acknowledge, oh, yeah, everybody has blind spots, but they don't think it's really important enough for me to do something about it, because whatever my blind spots may be, if I have any, are really not important. I'm doing okay. That seems to me to be the standard core response. I mean, may not be what they say.
Well, I know. I believe that my blind spots are massive, substantial, and holding me back from fulfilling the vision that light, that God's given me to fulfill. And so, like, I'm like the Ethiopian eunuch, where I am hungry to know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that and that's the key to it. If you really get hungry enough to know, God's not going to withhold that information from you. Most people acknowledge it, that it may be a fact, but they're not that hungry to know. And if you're not hungry to know, it means you're probably not going to do anything about it. And God doesn't put that trip or condemnation on you by revealing things to you that you're then not going to do anything about.
So do you think if you shared something that you thought might be my blind spot that I might not do anything with it?
I think that if I saw a blind spot in you, the only way I could do that is if the Lord revealed it to me in some way. And in my experience, the Lord is not that specific, because I don't think for the most part he wants me mending you. He wants you mending you.
But what if...
Oh, if he reveals something to me, and he has in the past in some cases, it's fairly vague and oblique, but it's enough to where I can zero a conversation in some specific areas that will lead the individual to say, oh, wow, yeah, and discover it himself.
So what if God wanted to keep me really humble and reveal it, you know, through somebody else, so I'm not doing self-discovery, but God's revealing it through others, so that would help to reinforce that, Mark, you're really not that, you know, you're not that important. I mean, you're important, but not that important. You're smart, but you're not really that smart, and you really need people. I mean,
yeah.
See, I think you either know something of a blind spot with me, or God will reveal that fairly quickly to you, and I want to know that.
Uh-huh.
So has God revealed anything to you up to this point?
Well, I think that you may be leaning, and all of these things are a continuum. I have never seen black and white. I don't see black and white in the scripture. I see continuum. And I think you tend on occasion to lean towards your own understanding, because if you don't fully understand something, you're uncomfortable with the gray areas. You like things black and white, and I think that causes you to act just on what you fully understand and lean on your own understanding. I think God tends to keep us a little bit in the area of mystery simply because he wants us dependent on himself rather than dependent on our own understanding, and that's sort of Proverbs 3:5. How would you be totally dependent on the Lord if he revealed everything you wanted to know completely to you in black and white? You would tend to say, okay, now I know everything. You know, it's kind of like Adam and Eve. God answered all their questions, and pretty soon they got an hankering for the tree of knowledge, i.e., I know things independent of God. And once again, it's a continuum on doubting your dependence on God. But
so if I went further along that continuum, how do you think I would show up different?
Well, further along the continuum in which direction?
In the positive direction of trusting in God more and being okay with the gray areas.
Well, then you would be slightly more into leading people to rely on God's wisdom and relationship with him in order to get that, rather than what he has already revealed to you. In other words, what you're putting out as, hey, I've discovered this, this is the way you go. And so, in the extreme, and I'm not saying that's where you are, but in the extreme, you're providing people with a system that would benefit them rather than a God to indwell them, which will guide them and benefit them. And that's a fine line, and it's hard to dance on that line.
So in the extreme, I'm providing a system which will what?
Which will guide their steps instead of a God who will guide their steps. And that's the problem with our children. You know, we raise our children, and we try and teach them right for wrong. That's exactly what they should learn as a little child, and to be dependent on us to answer their questions and get the truth and so on. But our objective, of course, is to bring them to a point where they're no longer dependent on us, but dependent on God, because they have developed a relationship with him and can go to him for with the questions that they used to go to us with. And the thing is, if we don't do that, then eventually we have a heap of trouble, because they become teenagers, and then they're not going to come to us anyway, for the most part. And so what we need to do is to bring them to a dependence on us. Lean not on your own understanding, but on your daddy and your mommy's understanding, and then gradually wean them off of that to lean not on your own understanding, but lean on God. And to do that, you have to have a relationship with him. And the optimum that we all hope for is that will happen, and as they become teenagers, 12, 13, 15, 18, and so on, they gradually we allow them to pull away from us, because they're pulling in the direction of leaning on the Lord. Unfortunately, some parents overdo it in one way, and they try to fight for control, and that's a losing battle. And it tends to make them a little bit rebellious and give them problem with authority. And on the other hand, we just sort of back off and are pretty agnostic. Finding the right way is a hard thing, and it's just it's luck, and I wish you luck. And don't create a sense that you can depend on God, who is absolute and an absolute source who will guide you. And so they don't understand that they can do it. So then they're subject to peer pressure and somebody's opinion. And it's pretty unstable life when there is really nobody to go to that can give you direction when you need it. And so as I say, it's a continuum where you can, if you go too far in the one direction, you sit back and do nothing because I'm nothing and I'm nobody and therefore I can't do anything. Well, no, God made us all perfect. God didn't make any trash. And he gave us good mind to be able to execute and act on what he leads us to do and to think. But that means we have to spend time with him and time in his word and gradually put him, if not in the center of our lives, at least towards the center, where we've got some direction in our lives. And then self-confidence is sort of a fool's goal, but confidence in the Lord can be very, very useful, particularly for an entrepreneur, because you have to have some confidence or you would never get anything done.
Right. Well, I appreciate you sharing that with me. That is helpful. That is helpful. Any other blind spots you think might be there?
I'm sure there may be, but the Lord will know them, not I. And that's once again, I don't want you leading on my understanding, but on his. And I do firmly believe that if we realize that we have blind spots and realize that that's serious and get serious about asking the Lord, he definitely will not hide it from us. To me, it comes in line with a verse that is dear to you and to me, and that's Romans 8:28. All things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purposes. Well, if we're called according to his purposes, it means we have to spend time with him and really be asking him, what is my calling? What do you want me to do? Not only today, but in the bigger picture. And it also tells me that there's nobody outside of myself that can do me damage. Anything they do to me does nothing but strengthen me. God has promised that. That's a promise. But it then tells me that the only person that he has left with free will to harm me is me.
Right.
And that's kind of awesome to think about. Anybody, I don't have to be worried about the other people, and we constantly are. But I do have to be worried about me, because I'm the only one who can undo God's plan for my life. Man, anybody else does anything to me, fires me, does whatever, all it's going to do is strengthen me. God will see to that. And he's up there playing a giant multidimensional chess game, putting all the pieces and all the circumstances and all our, even all our sins together. I mean, look at, he even used Pharaoh and some others who had evil intentions and worked those things for good.
Right.
Joseph said, you meant it for the, for evil, but God meant it for good.
Right.
And so that kind of illustrates it, and that takes a lot of the pressure off of what a lot of people's philosophy is, a dog-eat-dog business world. I don't have to worry about what you're going to do to me, but I do have to worry every single day about what I'm going to do to me if I strike out on my own without God's direction.
Right.
And that's a daily thing.
Right. Right. Ralph, I appreciate it so very much. Thank you.
Okay, my friend.
All right. We'll see you. God bless you, too. All right. If you're listening to the rebroadcast, wow, that was pretty cool. Feel free to connect with the individual who invited you to participate in today's session, or you can call toll-free 888-230-2300. That's 888-230-2300. Or if you're calling outside the U.S., you can call the U.S.-based number at 630-393-9909. That's 630-393-9909. God bless and have an amazing day. Bye-bye.